If you haven't played Paddy Power Fantasy yet, you're missing out. But on the upside, if you haven't played it yet, you qualify for a risk-free first go. Get up to £20 back as cash when you play Paddy Power Fantasy. And because every NFL game day is a season in itself, you don't have to wait to find out if you've won. Paddy Power Fantasy. Hate waiting, love winning. New customer offer, min £5, max £20 refund. T's and C's apply. Paddy Power Fantasy rules apply. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
Barry Lowe, welcome to ESPN HQ.
It's a pleasure to be here. It's like stepping into paradise, almost.
That's exactly what it's like.
You know when you dream of something, you're thinking, oh, it can't be that great in real life. And now I'm here.
Lives up to all your expectations.
Well, it's even better than I thought.
Better than you enjoyed the life-size cutouts of NBA players that we were looking at outside the studio.
Outside the studio, there is James Harden.
Yes, you're a big fan, I know.
I'm not a big fan but of James Harden because I used to play a lot of basketball. And
in the pros?
Forgive me, almost the pros. Sure. Isle of Wight League. Right. And I'm sure he travels, or I sent you, every time he does that 3-point thing, he'll do a little bit underneath, step over a bit, and then he'll take about 8 steps back to the 3-point line. They all do it. They also go, oh, the 3-point line, just step back there, and the rest go, God, it's James Harden, it's LeBron, so just forget about that then. Just forget, let's let him take as many steps back to the 3-point line and then do that.
Former, Isle of Wight Pro League, way back in the day, when we first started doing NFL stuff together, because you and I've known each other for years and years, right?
Yes, yeah, so when we were teenagers.
We weren't teenagers. We weren't far off, to be honest. We're going back almost 20 years, I think. But when we started doing, for years, we didn't realize we both loved NFL, and then we worked that out. We've done a lot of stuff over the years, and you, at one stage, were trying to make it as a quarterback in the NFL. How's that all going?
I was trying to make it, as a quarterback. That's right. And I went along to an NFL day they had with young players. I was in my early 30s and everyone else was 16, and right. It was basically a series of fitness drills. And I had to go to a friend's from like 30th the night before, so I was almost sick. And then had to run around all day, and then these coaches made us do some quarterback drills. But I was actually the best. I had five for six.
Oh, wow.
I didn't have the best arm. And there was a rugby guy who could properly throw it.
Had a tank.
Yeah. Have you seen him?
Yeah, he actually have a tank.
Have you ever played with him who's properly got a cannon arm?
Cannon arm, yeah. It's incredible. And you're like,
But have you actually caught a ball off someone?
Oh, the pace of it just stings.
Almost break your fingers.
I did a similar kind of thing for ESPN, actually, where with a lot of the Jags veterans. So they had Tony Baselli, Keenan McCardle, the receiver, teaching me how to play different positions. And Mark Brunell, quarterback, was the quarterback coach. Yeah, my God, when you actually catch a ball from somebody who is slinging it, it is... But this is what they used to say about Kaepernick. I remember receivers used to say about Kaepernick that he almost throws it too hard, and that is seasoned receivers saying this, that he puts too much pep on the ball.
Especially when it's about 10 yards away.
Yeah, bam.
But they throw it over there... Because naturally, when you haven't, I used to throw it here, but all the quarterbacks throw it over, above their head.
Yeah. As opposed to kind of sidearm, unless you're Mahomes, he likes to sidearm it. Yeah. So that dream, sadly, well, the academy, of course, the NFL academy has opened up. So have you thought, has that rekindled your desire?
I've not heard of anything. I'm 43 now, so sure. I'm just older than Tom Brady.
Sure, we're going to talk about Brady in a bit.
Yeah.
We're going to get into Brady, because of course it's Wild Card Weekend.
Yes, it is.
One of my favourite weekends of the season, because you have double bill on Saturday as well as Sunday. I love that. I love it spread
out. It's non-stop football.
But no red zone, of course. So.
No red zone. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to the
I quite like that weekend. In a way, though, much as I love red zone. I quite like watching a game. That's one of the biggest issues, well, the only issue, I think, with red zone is that it just... by its very nature, is so fast and cuts away so much that you don't see analysis. You can't watch a game breathe. I like to sit down and watching a game.
I do. I prefer it. That's what I like about... Recently, I've been choosing to watch longer games. I always watch Detroit games, and then I always sort of try and watch another team. My team, the Lions, I've been watching all the teams in the... like the Redskins, the Giants, the Dolphins, the Bengals, because halfway through the season, pretty much half the fans are looking at the draft order.
Sure.
This is the first season I've been hoping my team will lose, and they've done brilliantly, but just enough not to get Chase Young. So, just enough to get the third pick, which is insignificant.
So how do you feel about the Lions season, given the fact that Matt Stafford went down. So that has been the get out of jail card for Matt Patricia. How do you feel about that? Do you feel that Patricia is the right guy to take you forward? Or are you frustrated that he's going to get, seemingly going to get another year? I think despite how bad you've been,
there've been loads of injuries. I mean, Stafford's so crucial to the side, but you know, everyone got injured. I mean, Marvin Jones was injured. Trey Flowers was out. Kerryon Johnson was out.
Dealt Quandre Diggs as well.
See, this is the weird thing. This is when you ask questions. So Quandre Diggs was dealt to the Seahawks and then started having, some of the greatest games in his career.
Sure.
Since moving. And then you think, all right, is Patricia, there's rumours that he's a really strict disciplinarian and some of the players don't like it.
Mind you, that happened, I guess, with someone like Marcus Peters, you know, the move in a decent setup, moved and suddenly started playing exceptionally well again. And I don't think you necessarily think, well, was that because the, you know, Wade Phillips and McVay have got it wrong with the Rams? Like, I know they've had a disappointing season. So maybe you can, sometimes it just benefits a player to be in a different situation, a fresh situation.
Yeah, I'll give Patricia one more chance. I'm not really enamoured with him. Jim Caldwell, who was there before, was just a really good, safe pair of hands and really well respected.
Yeah.
And he didn't get the results, obviously. And they thought, oh, Patricia was a hot young base. Every single coordinator at the Patriots is touted as the hot young thing.
Yeah.
And whether they turn into it or not, I mean, there's been a limited success story of
true. You look at how many of those Belichick lieutenants have actually been successful. Mind you, that's starting to change because you've got Flores, who I know you're a big fan of.
I thought I watched the Dolphins, bits of the game and the highlights again. And for a team, the Dolphins, who have basically, what was it? Most of them have just been free agents and just rookie. They were playing some of the most exciting football. Fitzmagic was in full force. Devontae Parker looks amazing.
Perfect quarterback for that situation, isn't he?
Yeah.
But Josh Rosen is an interesting one because we were talking about this on the Wednesday pod with Carlson, actually, that a lot of quarterbacks on the market going into next season. So the draft's got a few, you know, coming through and quite a few definitely feasible starters in the NFL will be available, right? So, for example, one, presumably Nick Foles, if they move forward the Jags with Minshew, that type of player. You've got Rivers, Dalton. These guys can still start in the NFL. And you've got to put Josh Rosen in that mix, right? Because he is, you know, a top 10 pick, had one difficult rookie season like virtually every rookie quarterback ever. And then situation, and I think it's a lot to do with just the wrong situation again. He could be unlucky with that. And the flip side, we were chatting before we came on air, weren't we, that Dak Prescott is almost the inverse, diametric opposite there, that he just bounced into the right thing. Romo got injured. He got a shot. He took that shot and fair play to him. But he could have easily, as a, you know, mid-round pick or third, fourth-round pick, ended up in Cincinnati, sat under Dalton for a couple of years and bounced out of the league. And at the moment, there is a chance. Well, do you think Rosen will bounce out of the league? Or do you think someone will give him a shot?
I think he'll get a shot, definitely, with the number of injuries there is. I mean, if you think 3 years ago, I remember when Rosen was the possible number one pick in the draft. And everyone said, oh, he was at UCLA, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He had questions about his attitude.
He
was a bit too cocky.
Yeah, that's
right. And that's the thing, is whether the players like him, and whether he's got that NFL attitude. But he was quite...
Sometimes you hear that. That is, I mean, it's not just unique to the NFL either. Players that, again, using a kind of massive generalization of stereotype, but back in the day in Premier League dressing rooms, if you read a broadsheet newspaper, you were different, you know? So you don't quite know. I know that the NFL, we're in 2020, and the NFL locker rooms are, you know, a fairly broad spectrum in many respects. But you don't quite know whether, because he's not a conventional...
Yeah.
Locker room type, whether, but I suppose a quarterback has to be. I think you probably get away with that.
Jay Cutler thing, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
Where he never really fit in with the Bears and it was always
surly.
I remember going to watch the Bears play at Wembley and going to a press conference with Jay Cutler and the feeling of him not wanting to be there and the disrespect for all the British journalists was just feeling. It was just there like, oh, I've got to do this. Who are these idiots? I don't think Josh Rosen is as bad as that. I do think he will get another chance. I mean, it's quite interesting. I think talking about Rivers.
Do you remember the smoking Jay Cutler?
What was that one?
Smoking Jay Cutler. I think it was a website that then kind of parlayed into a whole load of memes, but just pictures of Jay Cutler with cigarettes or other things superimposed on him. It's worth checking that. I'm sure it still goes strong somewhere. Yeah.
But Rivers is, I mean, Ruiz is interesting. Whether it's sad seeing players, I hate when players leave franchises. They're just ingrained into the history of.
Yeah.
Like we talk about Brady and Rivers, and Ruiz was clearly pretty upset at his press conference.
Yeah.
So you think, where does he go? Has he sort of fallen off form a bit? This, it seems to be his decision making wasn't on a par with what was before, but I don't know.
In a difficult, again, it's back to situation. I think, obviously, a player, when you're getting into your late 30s, in Brady's case, early 40s, there is going to be an element of decline. And Drew Brees seems to be an anomaly there, because if anything, he's playing as well as he has ever done. But there is going to be an element of decline. So, of course, so much, you've got to adjust your game to a degree, and so much depends on what's around you. And the Chargers are not a good side. I mean, they're not a bad side. They're losing quite a lot of close games, and they, in true Chargers fashion, threw stuff away. But they're not a good side. You put Rivers in a genuinely contending side. You put Rivers at the Bears.
Well, that's the thing. I think the Bears are the side that are crying out for one of these quarterbacks. I think I've watched the Bears play a lot, being a Lions fan, and Trubisky, I think, is awful. I mean, the fact they wasted a second pick on him.
I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
And where they could be with a decent quarterback, and you can think, oh, Rivers will be amazing there. Brady, I don't know, Brady doesn't feel right for the Bears. Nick Foles, you go Nick Foles.
Yeah.
Anyone who could slide in there and suddenly think, they're at least wild card contenders next year.
Even Dalton, you know, and some Bengals fans might laugh at that, but yeah, I think it would be an upgrade because they've invested so much in him, in Trubisky. It's crazy. It's understandable how you can whiff on a quarterback pick. You know, very few Andrew Lucks that come out that are sure things, right? Burrow looks like that kind of player, but it's the fact that they reached up for him. And so they're in this vicious situation, which a lot of teams find themselves in. The Jaguars, I guess, did with Bortles, because it's slightly different. But when they re-upped his contract, they had to then stick with him, and they missed that window. And the Jags now are fragmenting and rebuilding, and are not, you know, they were a few minutes away from the Super Bowl a few years.
Yeah.
That's crazy to think that. Couple of news stories, then we'll get into the wild card pick.
Sure, man.
It looks like, the worst kept secret in football is out now, that the Cowboys are going to move on from Jason Garrett. And this is something that we qualified on the Wednesday show, Mike and I, when we were talking about it, which I think has been misreported that a little bit anyway, that Jerry Jones doesn't need to fire Garrett. He's out of contract in about 10 days, I think. Mid-January, 14th, I think it is. So it's not a case of, we're going to fire Jason Garrett, he's not going to re-up his contract. Everybody knew that was going to happen, but the Cowboys have been mysteriously quite quiet about the situation. But sources now, so essentially leaks coming out saying that they're going to move on. Now, maybe they were considering a different role for him in the organization and they couldn't make that work. They're just letting the clock run out. But it is by all accounts, the Cowboys will move on from Garrett. Do you think he bounces into another head coaching gig?
Not straight away. I don't really, it's a weird thing trying to evaluate him, because the Cowboys have just been sort of fairly average. I can't work out whether his coaching is average, because the squad is quite good.
Yeah, very good.
I don't think it's as elite as everyone says, from what I've seen. I'm not really blown away by them. I think similar to comparing to Jim Caldwell, I said before, of a quite a good coach with a quite a good team. They never really do badly. Mm. Well, this year you could say was disappointment and they could have won that division, but I don't know.
Look at his record, right? So he's 85 and 67 is his, is his record. He's finished 8-8 four times in nine seasons, won just two playoff games, never got past the divisional round. And really, when you look at the talent in this Cowboys side, missed the playoffs far too often. I mean, there's 8-8 seasons, right? So I think it whichever way you cut it, he's underperformed with the talent that's been there. But it's a difficult gig because Jerry Jones controls so much.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know how much. Obviously, he is probably the most public owner there is in the NFL.
I think so.
And I don't know what role. And you think Jason Garrett may have, how much input did he have in the team? How much of it is the reason Jason Garrett was kept on for so long?
Because he's a patsy,
And that might be the case. I mean, I'd be fascinated to see what they're like next season if they sort of just plummet, or if they stay the same, what they'll do.
Do you take a head coach who, and therefore move away from everything you've done to date by handing over a significant amount of control, particularly in terms of personnel, to get the kind of guy that you want, like McCarthy, for example.
Well, I think the perfect guy's just gone to Washington, Riverboat Ron. Mm. I love him. Yeah. I think he's great. I think he, I just like the way he's quite adventurous and he's not typically conventional. And I think the Redskins, from what I've watched at the end of the season,
yeah,
have got so much talent.
Got talent there.
The wide receivers they've got.
He's put Del Rio in as well, which is a great shout.
Yeah, I think they pick up Chase Young or probably, yeah, and suddenly they've got Montez Sweat in the defense. Yeah, suddenly, yeah, they might be at worst. I'm putting money on them being at worst to first, yeah, possibly.
Because they're in the East as well, right? Yeah. It's a very winnable division.
So I think that would have been someone who had gone completely against the Jason Garrett. But I don't know, who are you thinking? I mean, will McCarthy want that role?
Well, this is it. I think only with certain conditions. So it's whether Jerry Jones thinks, I'm at a certain age now, we've had this long being relatively mediocre, do I need to change up how I run this operation to get the guy that I want? And if not, he's going to have, I mean, there's a lot of buzz about whether they'll look, to the college system and take a coach that's coming in for the first time. I mean, Mike Carlson was talking about Urban Meyer on the show on Wednesday, who's a very seasoned old pro. So I'm not sure he would necessarily accept that lack of control in terms of personnel, but I think it will come down to that, whether Jerry Jones compromises to get the right guy.
I don't think he will.
I'm not sure he will.
I think he'll be a younger coach that he can mould with his wrinkly old hands.
We need to before we get to the wild card, raise a glass to Sam Weish, the former Bengals coach, who died on Thursday at age 74. He was, of course, the head coach of the Bengals side that made it to the Super Bowl back in the 80s, the Boomer Esiason and Nicky Wood Super Bowl. We were kids around the same time and fell in love with the game around the same time. And it was a great side and, you know, narrowly lost out to the 49ers in that game.
The Bengals were great, weren't they, around that era? Yeah.
That was the famous Montana John Candy drive, right? Where he points in the Super Bowl, needs to get the job done, 2-minute drill. Look, guys, there's John Candy, and just calms everybody down by just taking the air out of the situation. So that was what everybody remembers about that game. But what people maybe don't necessarily recall as vividly is just how exciting the Bengals side was. And Esiason was a great quarterback. And a lot of our listeners and viewers now will know Esiason as a pundit and not necessarily remember him as a quarterback. He was great.
I mean, that was the time when it was always that Warren Moon was in there playing for the Oilers.
That's right.
Esiason.
Jim Kelly at the Bell. The Bills.
And who was the Browns? Was it Bernie Kosar?
Bernie Kosar at the Browns, who Belichick got rid of course. When he was the Browns head coach. Yeah, so vintage era. So yeah, Sam Weish, one of the greats, raising a glass to him, as I say, passed away on Thursday, age 74 years old. Right, let's get down to it, Marek. Wild card weekend. I'm sure first things first, you've read my column on ESPN about the playoffs.
I've read it two or three times.
Oh, good. Okay.
And each time I read it, it seems to get better.
Oh, that's great to hear. I appreciate that.
I studied English literature at university and I think, hang on a minute. People should be studying this stuff, right?
Is it up there with J.D. Salinger, would you say?
Better. I mean, he went off after the one book, didn't
just
he?
The one, just like one good column and I'm out.
He did. Your columns are regularly.
Oh, thanks, man. You got my back. Well, look, there is a lot to get into. I want to start with the Patriots for all kinds of reasons, because once again, we're here where, and of course, I suggested this in the column that everybody's writing them off again. And you can understand why. You can understand why people are dismissing the Patriots again this season. Does it feel different to you this season? Because we've been down this road so many times and they confound expectation and they find a way to get it done. Is it fundamentally different this time around?
It's odd because halfway through the season, everyone was banging on how great the Patriots are, how their defense was unstoppable. And I watched last week's game against the Dolphins. I said before, I just thought, this doesn't look like Patriots at all. They would get Fitzpatrick was tearing him apart. Stephen Gilmore, he was on Devontae Parker, and Devontae Parker was completely nailing it.
Yeah.
And it reminded me, I keep on about Detroit, where Darius Slay got done by Keenan Allen.
Yes.
Occasionally you get these, if you get really good route running, receivers, or someone uber talented, they expose these sort of shut down cornerbacks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought that was amazing. And I was watching Tom Brady's arms. Everyone's sort of waiting to go, oh, is the Tom Brady era over? And there was an interception he threw, which was just unlike Brady at the start when he misread the defense.
Yeah.
Threw it straight. Was it pick six? I can't remember if it was or not.
Wasn't a pick six, I don't think.
It was just not like Brady. And I thought, oh, is he gone? Is his arm gone? And yet then he's missing a couple of throws. And then you see, I saw him do a long bomb. I thought, I know he's still got the arm strength.
Yes.
I think the question is, I don't know if he obviously trusts Edelman, who wasn't really a target in that game, but does he trust?
Because of injury, yeah. He doesn't trust any of the other. This is the issue with Brady. And look, obviously, any quarterback has got to have, you got to be on the same page with your receiver, right? That's a fundamental. But with Brady, it is particularly accentuated, that factor. And those different receivers at the moment, for whatever reason, you got Dorsett and his hands are just, he's dropping too much. Mo Sanu, who's a really wily veteran,
with the 49ers, Manuel Sanders went in great.
Straight
you
away.
Thought he was a similar sort of pick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Apparently they should have got Sanders in, I think.
And Keel Harry is a rookie receiver. It is difficult. And yes, he's a first round pick. He's the first receiver Belichick's taken. It's a difficult thing to do in your first year to hit the ground running as a receiver. So all of those players, and then you got Jacoby Myers in a supporting cast. Yeah, Edelman's the only guy you can trust. Edelman is injured. And when you have that one dimension or that mono dimension, of course it's going to be more straightforward for defenses. They have sorted the running game out, it seems, to a degree, because with Devlin, their fullback going out, and this is what I mean, the textbook thing they worked out, we can get a Landon Roberts, linebacker, a jobbing linebacker essentially, parlay him into a fullback, and get that moving again. That is what we're dealing with here, with McDaniels in particular, and in that situation, and Belichick, just some of the best coaches the game will ever see, right?
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting, I think, with the Patriots in previous years, they've, you know, this might be a key factor that they're playing wildcard weekend.
Yes.
Normally, they're straight to divisionals. They've got home advantage.
First time since 2009 they're playing a wildcard game.
And you always seen, everyone writes to the Patriots, but they're so prepared for these games. All their playbook completely changes. So they start doing plays that you've not seen in the regular season because Belichick's a genius.
Yep.
And suddenly they're great in the divisionals and they're great and they find themselves in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
But with the fact that they're playing, I mean, I was so surprised by that Dolphins game.
I wonder if they need that though. I take your point. We were chatting about this on the radio broadcast that two games for the Super Bowl, you could believe the Patriots are still make it. So one of the production guys in the production team who was not an NFL fan was saying, are the Patriots going to be good this year? Why are they so good? So we were getting into all of this. And the general consensus from, you know, the NFL broadcasters, journalists on the show was saying, I can easily see the Patriots still making the Super Bowl despite all this. But then they lost to the Dolphins. Then they're suddenly playing the wild card. I'm not sure actually whether that does change a huge amount insofar as I wonder if they needed that slap in the face. Mm. That this game against the Titans, I could see them unleashing hell against the Titans.
Well,
everybody's writing them off.
But the only thing I'd say is that I've really enjoyed watching the Titans the last few weeks. And they are sort of the form side. They're exciting. The new Tannehill playing with passion. And that spread throughout the team. Derrick Henry looks an unstoppable force.
He does.
It's whether I would fancy the Patriots, ironically, to overturn the Bills or the Texans. I think they've got the hardest getting the Titans.
They're going into Foxborough. So let's talk about where this will be won and lost. Derrick Henry's fundamental, as you say, rushing leader, absolutely representative of the momentum of this team. He just is driving them. It's not solely, of course, and we'll talk Tannehill in a moment, but Henry is the heartbeat of this offense. The Patriots have to stop him, and they're going to go to the ground and try and establish that because it will set up so much for the Titans if they can get him moving. So that battle is going to be key, whether Henry can run it up the gut of the Patriots and they can establish a ground game quickly. Let's talk about Tannehill and the aerial offense on show here against what is still an incredibly strong Patriots D and Patriots secondary. I take your point about Gilmore getting shown up by Devontae Parker, but everybody has bad days, right? And it happens to everybody. And you're absolutely right. The first half of the season, we were being told this wasn't just one of the best defenses in the NFL right now. This is one of the best defenses statistically looking at DVOA of all time, right? So it hasn't suddenly got bad and you've got Belichick presiding over it. So what do you think of that matchup? Are the Titans, maybe because of the ground game, if they can establish that, going to be able to get enough going in the air?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, who's the rookie receiver? AJ Brown, is it?
Brown.
And he looks great, but is he just too fresh? Because Stephen Gilmore's an old pro. He knows what he's doing. Will he be able to shut down? Well, he'll be on Brown, I presume.
Yeah.
Will he be able to shut? That'll be a really interesting battle to see if last week was just a blip, which I think it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you can't, I feel like I'm just repeating what everyone said, you can't write off the Patriots. Every time, we've done this every year for the last 8 years. Right. And I think they're going to see, we're going to see trick plays, we're going to see different stuff from the Patriots, we're going to see it all mixed up. And I think that might be a bit tricky for the Titans D to cope with. I mean, you'd say you've got the Titans offense and the Patriots defense. It's like a really sort of premium sort of battle. Mm. Whereas the Patriots offense and Titans defense maybe looks like two of the weaker parts playing each other. So we'll see how it turns out.
People are talking about the Titans secondary as a weak link. And I kind of understand that on the one hand, but Bill Barmer, the brilliant Bill Barmer, great column on ESPN about each of the teams in the wild card round and their strengths and weaknesses. And he was saying, and look, Kevin Byard, there's no doubt, is a great player, but he was saying the Titans secondary is better than people think. And that, again, could be critical. Because I think when you're looking at base level, surface level matchups, you're thinking, well, this is actually a favorable matchup for the Patriots at the moment, because although they haven't got the passing game in sync, this Titans secondary isn't as strong as it could be compared to, say, the Bills, for example. Barmore argues, well, actually, it might be stronger than you think. And for example, he points out that the slot corner in the Titans D ranks third in the NFL. And so various elements in the secondary is perhaps better than you think. And if they can frustrate Brady again, and so speaking of one dimensional, they try and go to the ground game particularly, it could be, you know, another difficult day for Brady. There's an energy about this Titans side as well. I did a piece with Vrabel and some of the captains when they were over playing at Wembley last season. And I just liked them straight away, like Vrabel. He was getting quite a lot of criticism at the time. You remember that Wembley game, he went for 2 points to win it, which I loved as well. He was getting a lot of criticism. On back to your point about Belichick lieutenants and are they good enough as head coaches? You could just sense that he commanded respect, but authority, but was relaxed with the players as well. And there was a gang of them, Wesley Woodyard, who ended up doing the Super Bowl with two, Jarrell Casey, these guys who were just seasoned vets, good guys, great players, underrated players as well. And they just bought in. You could tell they're buying into Vrabel. And it's no surprise to me at all that they've done what they've done this season. They've got this energy. And I wonder if we are talking about momentum and we're talking about trajectory, so whether this is the situation we're seeing unfold, that maybe it's the beginning of the end, because although it's undeniable the genius and the scheming and everything else of Belichick in particular and the Patriots coaching, experience and wily old veterans in the mix, maybe now this is a next generation coming through and it is the end of the road. If it is the end of the road for this particular incarnation of the Patriots in this Belichick-Brady dynasty, does Tom Brady retire or does Tom Brady move on and play for another team?
Well, I think it'd be crazy to play for another team. You're 42 years old. Just enjoy your life. You've done everything. You can never do anything as good as you've done before. I mean, there's talk of him going to the Broncos, isn't there?
There's talk,
where
yeah.
He would go in, slot in for a season, and then they would do the old Manning Super Bowl special. But
are they a strong enough team? This is the thing. So to your point, why do it? Maybe the clue or the answer to that is in everything we've known about Brady, which is despite everything he's achieved, he is still has a chip on his shoulder about being drafted so low. And he is, because he's such a great competitor, because he's one of the greatest players of all time, probably the greatest quarterback of all time. Certainly, no doubt in terms of what he's achieved, the greatest quarterback of all time. He can't help himself. He has this innate drive that he has a point to prove. And if they go out in the wild card round or they go out without winning the Super Bowl or getting to the Super Bowl, I wonder if Brady won't be able to help himself having another dance and wanting to go again. And in which case is he's surely going to want to go to a contender, right? A team that has a shot at the Super Bowl next year. I'm not sure the Broncos do.
Maybe, but you said the Browns before, but yeah. I think that's too messy, the Browns. I was reading someone who said did they come from the Browns to the Lions? And they said the culture is completely different. So under Patricia, the Lions was far more disciplined. At the Browns, it was a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
And I think that has been it, and that has really shown in their record. I wonder if Tom Brady would be the right fit for those. there's too many egos there, really, isn't there?
That's what I wonder if that he's a perfect fit for those egos. But you're right. Will he go to a situation that he thinks is going to be the Browns have a puncher's chance of the Super Bowl next year if they can keep most of the personnel together and find the right coach, right? And find a stronger quarterback. Maybe they've invested too much in Baker Mayfield and it's crazy talk, but if McDaniels was to go, and again, there's a lot of ifs here, right? But if McDaniels was to take the gig and we hear the Browns are interested in him and it kind of makes sense in a way that McDaniels will look at the offensive talent there and be tempted. Now we're hearing, or we hear that McDaniels, that he might be the succession plan of Foxborough. He has been schooled in that Belichickian Bill Walsh, don't go anywhere near an organization that looks even vaguely toxic. So would he take the gig or not? But if he did, then suddenly things start to fall into place.
Well, does Belichick go as well?
Well, right.
See, here's what I think was going to happen. It's going to be typical Patriots luck. Belichick and Brady decide to go.
Yeah.
They tank next year. They get Josh McDaniels takes over and they get Trevor Lawrence. Yeah. The greatest prospect since Andrew Luck.
Sure.
And then they're good for another 20 years.
For another 20 years. It's all
That's what's going to happen.
So what do you think? All said and done, do you think, win or lose, if Brady gets to the Super Bowl, because I could see him winning the Super Bowl if they win the Super Bowl, which right now is a very big if. I could see the Patriots winning the Super Bowl and Brady retiring as a champion.
If they won the Super Bowl, he would definitely retire.
Yeah, I think so too.
Absolutely. If they don't, I mean, there's no real backup at the Patriots, is there? Who is the quarterback to go in? I don't even know who.
Jarrett Stidham is their backup.
Right. Well, so there's no real person to step in there. Mm. Anyway, so there's no one challenging him. There's no sort of clamour for someone else to replace Brady there. Mm. They've got to develop a new quarterback anyway. I think I wouldn't be surprised if I see them get sort of shrewd late first round quarterback pick of someone that Belichick scouted from somewhere. But I don't know. Mm. I think if they lose, that Brady will stay on for another year.
At the Patriots or in the NFL?
I think at the Patriots.
Mm. I think he'll stay on. I wonder.
Who are you going to say goes to?
I don't know. The Browns is probably really fanciful. I think if he goes, he has to go to a contender.
The Chargers.
Chargers, maybe. Do you qualify them as a contender next season though? I think it's like Favre going to Minnesota.
Mm.
They almost did, you know, he knew they had a very real shot of winning it. I think he's only going to take that gig.
Well, he's not really a Bears. He's not a Bears player, though.
But would they qualify in that respect? Brady's at the Bears. Would they be in the playoffs? I don't know. All of that is to come out in the wash. First things first, though, pick the Titans-Patriots game. Which way do you think it's going to go?
It's going to go down to a 2-point conversion. Again.
Really?
The Titans are going to win 22-21.
Wow. What makes you so sure about, and they're going to roll the dice on that to win it?
Yeah. It'll be literally the last second. No, 20.
It'll be 21-20 and they'll
25,
go.
25-24 because there'll be a field goal there. It'll be 24-23. They've got a touchdown. Derrick Henry, you know, AJ Brown in the top, in the right hand corner.
Okay.
Touchdown. They're going to think, oh no, he's going to bubble the ball. No, he's caught it. And then they go for the 2 points.
And they go for two and they get it.
Tannehill goes in.
And they get it. Tannehill goes in. Oh, I love it. All right. That is the later game on Saturday night, Sunday morning, UK time. The earlier one on Saturday, also from the AFC, is Buffalo-Houston. In Houston, of course, the Bills, the road team here, the Houston Texans, both with 10-6 records, but the Texans winning the AFC South, so getting the home field advantage. Big, big key to this game is the fitness of Will Fuller, wide receiver. And you'll have heard Will Fuller's name a lot this week, a lot over recent weeks really, because everybody says how instrumental he is to this offense. But that's undeniable. Will Fuller changes the way the Texans play. That changes the way that defenses scheme and the things they have to think about against the Texans. He is a speedster. He is a deep threat. He opens up so much for DeAndre Hopkins. He liberates Deshaun Watson. He's fundamental. As we're recording this, which is Friday, suggestions are he's going to be a game time decision, but leaning towards probably not playing, or if he's playing, nowhere near fit. I think that's a massive problem for the Texans. I like the Texans all week long on the basis Will Fuller was going to play. Will Fuller doesn't play. I think this becomes a really, really close one to call. If Will Fuller plays, I think the Texans, if not walk it, that might be overstating it, but win it reasonably comfortably.
Well, with him, they've got a lot of firepower. Obviously, he's not going to be fully fit or are they just saying that? Is it a bit of, I mean, you'd think they wouldn't say anything. They say he's fully fit and just play him. So they got him. So he's covered as if he's fit.
Well, they're
for at least the first quarter. So yeah, he must be something wrong with him if he's not playing.
They're officially saying that he is a game time decision. It's people close to the organization reporting.
He's probably in an oxygen tank now. Getting cream rubbed over him constantly. He's in a cream bath in an oxygen tank getting all the weapons. So you get all the cold, you get those cold things, don't you? Those cold rooms.
The ice baths. Which is where Antonio Brown, the cryogenic rooms.
Yes, so I went to, my girlfriend's, works as of a beauty journalist and she got us free pass to Champneys.
Yeah.
And we got toured all around Champneys, which is basically, if people don't know, it's just a sort of health spa in just north of London. And they've got this cryogenic room that was basically a cold room. It goes down to minus 40 or something, but it's a different, you don't feel cold, you just have a, and they have pictures of Frankie Dettori and Frank Bruno.
Of course.
And they're all going there for their injuries, and they sit in this room, and you've heard this before, haven't you?
Where, no.
It's special treatment where you go into this.
Oh, I know. Oh, sorry. I thought I'd heard your story before.
No. Yeah. But you know what it is? You go in, it's supposed to accelerate the old healing, isn't it?
That's right. Well, this is what Antonio Brown got scuppered in Paris. He did his, I think it was in France, certainly in the off season, which is where he burnt his feet and the whole.
Oh, he forgot to put,
socks on.
Socks on. Yeah.
Did you enjoy it? Did you experience it?
I went in there for 1 minute and I thought, I said, oh, it's quite cold.
You meant to stay.
But then when I came out, I looked about 10 years, immediately.
It's amazing.
I looked 10 years younger and I could sprint.
I thought you looked fresh, actually.
When this was 10, it was about 10 years ago. Okay. Quite rough. So, I mean, we could, ideally, Nat, this would be a cryogenics room you do the podcast in.
I like the idea of doing a bit of a road trip in the off season. We can go and sample a cryogenics room.
We should do it before and after.
I love it. I love it. I'm writing it down. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Make sure you bring your socks though, so you don't do an Antonio Brown.
Socks and maybe a clean pair of pants.
Definitely a clean pair of pants. Back to the Texans.
Talking of clean pair of pants, back to the Texans.
So, I mean, let's look at the Bills for a moment, because defense, they're a team firstly without any real superstars compared to a lot of the teams in this league, right? They've only got one Pro Bowler. Out of, you know, for a playoff team, that's the least out of all the playoff teams. Their offense, I don't want to labor the point here, but, you know, they have Brown and Beasley with Josh Allen as well. I just don't feel that is enough for a deep playoff run. I just don't feel
he's
it
not,
is.
I'm not sold on Josh Allen. I've watched him. He's when they, it's different to Lamar Jackson where he runs the ball. It looks a decision for him to run the ball. A lot of time with Josh Allen, it looks as if he hasn't read the
playbook.
Yeah, and then he's just gonna run then. Obviously they've got a deep threat of John Brown because he's got his cannon arm, but yep. I mean, that is, there's only so much you can do with that. And the Texans.
The confusing thing on that though, I think, I don't know if you agree or not, because I'm with you on Allen, I'm unconvinced. Someone, I think it might have been Bill Simmons, described him as a great athlete, not so sure he's a great quarterback, right? Which I think is a really good description of him. But he does sometimes hit that throw right on the money. Like, he will suddenly do a throw and you think, oh, okay, I was completely wrong. This guy clearly knows what he's doing. You know, quarterbacks come into the league and they're never convincing or rarely convincing, and they don't do anything that makes you think, yeah, you're gonna, they just don't have that presence. They certainly don't have the passing ability, reading situations, have any of that combination. Allen has some of that. He seems to do certain things like he's a seasoned pro.
You do get that. He's in that sort of league of quarterbacks. I sort of put Blake Bortles is the bottom end.
Yes.
Josh Allen is the middle.
Yeah.
And Daniel Jones is quite similar as well, but I think he's the top end. I was watching Daniel Jones.
Just take Jones over Josh Allen.
Yeah, because I think he's more intelligent. And I think he does the same thing to Josh Allen, where Josh Allen will just miss players on screens. Mm. And it's so frustrating to see him just miss the ball, or he'll put too much heat on it. He doesn't seem to know the power of his arm sometimes. Mm. And I'm not convinced how intentional his act. I mean, he will make amazing throws, but it's so inconsistent that I don't trust him.
Bills have had, and this is not their fault because they're in the AFC East and that's the way the cards fall, but they've had one of the easiest schedules in the NFL. So do you think it's quite misleading that we're getting a little bit carried away about the Bills? Because I think there's quite a lot of buzz about them. A lot of people fancy them to beat the Texans. Are we reading too much into that because they've had quite a vanilla schedule?
They sort of snuck in, haven't they? No one, they never really got any attention. They just, you
one
know.
One big win, the kind of big win against the Cowboys who turned out not to be that good was the, yeah. was their, the, I guess the focal point. They ran the Patriots close a couple of times, but again, the Patriots, you know, have been sputtering. So.
I mean, the fascinating battle here is if Will Fuller's playing, that'll be a real, you've got one of the, great offense. You know, I really like the running backs. I really like Carlos Hyde. I really like Duke Johnson as yeah. well. Johnny Hopkins, you don't say anything about him. He's brilliant.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson, I love as well. You've got a really, an offense with so many weapons, and that will really be a test of the Bills D.
Yeah.
And yeah. see whether they, if they can handle that. So it's it would be fascinating. But I think, I just fancy the Texans, I think.
You fancy, I do as well. I do think though that Fuller is fundamental to that.
What happened to JJ Watt then?
He's back.
Is he definitely playing?
Definitely playing.
So I think yeah. that will change things. Yeah. That he's such a talismanic figure.
Yeah.
Whether, I mean, it's crazy to think that they've lost, they've had most seasons without JJ Watt. They traded or Clowney went.
Yeah.
So there were potentially the two greatest defensive players at one time. And yeah. Clowney never really lived up to his potential.
Yeah.
But if Watt's back, it'd be fascinating to see if he has a big influence. But he does. I think it will be Texans by about 10.
Yeah, comfortably then. Irrespective of the Fuller situation.
Yeah, I think it'd be all right.
I like the Texans as well. I'm picking them too. Those are our Saturday games. Mm-hmm. Sunday, both NFC matchups, starting with a game that, Marek, I think a lot of people are suggesting is going to be pretty one-sided. I'm not so sure. Minnesota heading to the Superdome to take on the New Orleans Saints. The Vikings 10-6, the Saints 11-3. The Saints, one of those teams that came out of it the wrong way going into the final weekend when the seeds could have really, really mixed up and they got the job done again. And they're going in red-hot form, of course, into the playoffs. And the Vikings, on the other hand, are spluttering again. And the same problem that we hear about Kirk Cousins, he's not a primetime player and he's got an 0-8 record on Monday Night Football and he's good against bad teams, struggles against big teams. And you look at almost every area of this game and every key matchup and it favors the Saints. They are great at stopping the run. So you think Dalvin Cook, he's back and you get the ground game going and he's good to go. So the Vikings, the Saints haven't allowed a 100-yard rusher all season long. They're one of the strongest teams against the run. You then look at offensively just how impactful the Saints are at the moment. And the matchups there just seem to favor the New Orleans Saints to put a lot of points on the board here. But I'm not sure it's going to be as straightforward as that because I think the Saints will go into an early lead and I think the Vikings will chase the game. And I think they can. I think they have the weapons to do that. And I think in the secondary, whilst there's Marshawn Lattimore, I think there are weaknesses here in the Saints. Eli Apple's going to be out. And I think Cousins can, with Diggs in particular as a downfield threat, can exploit that. And these stats about no 100-yard rushes, they have to be broken at some point. These streaks have to be broken at some point. If anyone's going to break it, or certainly a handful of running backs that could, then Dalvin Cook is that guy, right? And so much depends on how fit he really is. Your point earlier on, Dalvin Cook might be banged up and it comes out afterwards and I'm playing on a torn ACL or, you know, whatever it is that you hear at this stage of the season. So many players are really, really badly injured, but just play through it. But on the basis he's at 70%, the Vikings have a puncher's chance, don't they?
I think these are, from what I've seen this season at the moment, the best two teams in all of the wild cards.
Really?
I think the Vikings are underrated. Adam Thielen's back. He was injured.
Yeah.
I love him as a receiver, even though I'm an Niners fan. I think he's brilliant. He's had a bit of time. He was his first game back. So they've got Diggs and Thielen now, and they've got Cook. I just think they're really, apart from the first, if you look at the Vikings, I mean, the NFC North, the Packers are the worst. Are they 12-4, 13-3?
13-3, yeah.
They're the worst 13-3 side I've ever seen, I think.
Yeah.
They had the schedule was the same as the Lions. They played the NFC East. So you had they played the Eagles.
Yeah.
You know, Cowboys, and we played the AFC West. So you've got the Broncos, Chargers, and Raiders who are not really on form. So they've had a really easy,
they might have lucked out there.
Easy schedule. The Lions against the Packers should have beaten them twice. Rodgers seemed to be off form. I don't think they're a very good side. The Vikings, they basically rested their players last week because they knew they were in the wild card spot. They're unlucky to get the Saints. And the Saints, I think you've really got to question the whole seeding. When
would you change it?
Yeah,
and irrespective of divisional,
I would keep the division. Divisions. If you win division, you get in. but I would give it the 1-6 in terms of records, because it's the whole thing of the Eagles being at home to, but they're by far, well, the Eagles being at home to Seahawks is not fair. You know, the Saints, they're just, I mean, they would be third anyway. They would still be playing this spot, but it's crazy. They're probably the best wild card team in the last 10 years, I think. So it's unfortunate the Vikings come. So the Vikings, basically, when Kirk Cousins was playing well, after they realised that he could move about in the pocket a bit more, and when he was on form, I was blown away by Kirk Cousins when I saw him play after about week six of season.
He seems to be, and you know, I mentioned the primetime thing, which everybody singles out, right? He seems to be the most maligned quarterback given what he's achieved. Even like, you look at his passer rating, you look at statistically, people say, oh, that's just statistics, it proves that, you know, it's not passing the eye test, you gotta look at him. And look, I'm not suggesting that he is in the same bracket as Wilson or Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, the elite quarterbacks in the NFL right now, but he's a top 10, top 12 quarterback.
I think he
can win
a
Super Bowl with a top 10, top 12 quarterback.
When he was playing on form, some of the passes I saw, accuracy, he's intelligent, he obviously knows the game, he's experienced.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll be fazed by this. I think you'll like the fact that the Vikings are underdogs. I think they're far better than people think, and I think that the New Orleans D will have a bit of a shock. If Adam Thielen's fit.
Yeah.
And Dalvin Cook, after about week eight, his shoulder was...
It's his shoulder, yeah. So
I don't know what the situation is. We'll see, won't we? But I think it won't be like the Saints steamrolling the Panthers last game of the season.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, Cook is exceptional, but they've managed to get a fairly decent ground game going irrespective of having Cook or not. And yeah, Thielen, I think, is critical. If they can establish him and he's again up for it and fit, I think they are going to land a few punches, and I think they're going to surprise people in terms of how close it could be. And in the end, the Saints might run away with it, but I don't think it's going to be an absolute cakewalk for them. Which way are you going with it?
Saints. I think they're going to win it all this year.
You think the Saints are going to win it all?
Yeah.
Why do you think why are they your favourite?
I just think Drew Brees is on spectacular form. Yeah. We've got Alvin Kamara, we've got Michael Thomas, they're just loaded.
They've got enough receivers.
Maybe not, but they've got enough. Sean Payton's been there before. They've got a bit of a chip on their shoulder because of what happened to them in the, you know.
How important is that? Not the chip on your shoulder, that too, actually. It's a very fair point. But how important is the experience? Because we hear that a lot. I mean, people are comparing back to the Patriots Titans. Look at their collective playoff experience of the Patriots versus players versus the Titans, and players and coaches experience versus the Titans. I guess coaching definitely. But how important is it? Like, why does that matter so much?
It's not maybe the experience of certain coaches, like the wily coaches. So players, like coaches like Belichick, like Pete Carroll is another one.
Yes.
And Sean Payton, they're sort of something got a bit of a nasty edge to, they don't mind doing things that, but like gamesmanship. And I just think
the confidence in them.
Yeah.
Being...
I just think they're the sort of coach you feel you can get behind. They don't feel scared.
Is it
I
a
can't
bit
explain
like,
it. It's like the je ne sais quoi they've got.
Is it like in European football when you're going up against a Ramos or, you know, someone that's just been around the block and is going to wheel and deal dirty tricks, and you just feel confident that they are going to be rock solid stable?
Yeah.
And use the tricks of the trade.
Yeah. I think they just know, they've been there before, they know what to do. And I think those sort of, I just think this is going to be the Saints year.
Yeah. I can't argue with that. They're my pick for the Super Bowl, from the NFC anyway. I'm not saying winning the whole thing, but I think they will get there. They've got to get past the Vikings. I think they do, but I do think it's going to be closer. I think, you know, if we're talking about the type of game it's going to be, expect a lot of points in this.
This will be the best game, I think, of the offensively the most exciting game.
I'm happy
about
that.
It'll be like 35-24 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'm going to write down, we've got these not recorded, your scores, and see how close you are. We're doing that game. I'm doing that game for radio.
I should give you the Houston-Buffalo one then.
Okay, what score is that going to be?
Score 30-17
to the Texans. Yeah. All right, okay. We're going to see how close these are. Mike Carson's been going up against AccuScore, the computer in the States, and has beaten AccuScore.
Two robots against each other.
He's very happy about beating AccuScore in week 17.
I bet Mike Carson is AccuScore.
Oh, interesting.
I bet he finds
idea.
Out that AccuScore is his long lost brother.
Like twins with DeVito and Jordan. Oh boy. Final game of the weekend. is an intriguing one because it is injury central. The Eagles in particular, although the Seahawks are banged up, as you were saying before we came into the studio, the Eagles, I mean, remarkable how many injuries they've had at this crucial stage of the season, and they still managed to get the job done. I mean, the last couple of weeks, they've performed phenomenally well in spite of adversity, and a lot of credit has to go, obviously, to the coaching staff and Doug Peterson in particular.
And the, schedule.
And the, and the schedule as well, which, yeah, and being in the NFC East helped a hell of a lot, but they still, you know, they had two big games they needed to get done, and they did. And Carson Wentz as well, who it seems to be emerging from a kind of indifferent season, getting that reputation back, that status back, that before he got injured a few years back, he was on course for MVP, he was the real deal, he is the franchise quarterback for the next 10 years. And that all changed, of course, with the injury, and they went on to win it with Foles, and he came back and, oh, he's not the same player, and I'm worried about, is he ever going to be the same player? Wentz seems to be the biggest winner of all. Win or lose against the Seahawks, his status is, has been regained, hasn't it?
Yeah, sort of. I'm not completely sold.
Not convinced.
I thought he's, I thought
he's getting it done with a, with, you know, a second, third, four stringers.
Yeah, against not great opposition.
Okay, fair point.
I don't think, I think their schedule, was it Giants last week? I know they played some
Cowboys the week before.
Yeah, I just think, not convinced by those sides. And I mean, the Giants are 4-12, 5-11 team. I can't remember, 3-4, a bad losing team. Yeah. I've seen them play quite a lot. They're not great. Vince, I think he's good. I'm not, I don't think he's an elite quarterback. I mean, the big breakthrough last week was after Miles Sanders went out with Boston Scott.
Boston Scott, yeah.
He was a sixth round pick from the Saints, and he was electric.
Yeah.
I mean, it was halfway through the, or a quarter into the game, everyone else was knackered, and it is week 17. But he looked brilliant. I mean, if you've got, if he is that electric, then they have a chance of scoring 14 points.
just Boston Scott scoring.
Well, I think the Seahawks are, obviously they lost their, Penny, they lost, what's his name, Carson.
Carson Penny, Procise as well, so yeah, all of them out. So
Marshawn Lynch is there, and they've got that rookie Homer who looked, yeah, who looked actually looked Travis like Homer. He was better than Lynch, I
yeah
thought.
Well, he got more carries, he was averaging a lot more per, you know, yards per carry. So yeah, the, and look, we hear a lot about running backs are devalued because there's so much strength in depth, and the way the game is these days, you can slot players in, and then you see it as Zeke Elliott or Saquon Barkley or a Dalvin Cook, and you think, okay, maybe we got that role, McCaffrey. Maybe we're not so sure about, and then you see a situation like this where you're down to a player that nobody's heard of a week before stepping in and gaining similar productivity. Not just the running back core that are banged up for the Seahawks though. Dwayne Brown on the line, injured. Quandre Diggs, you'll be delighted to hear, inactive. Was inactive for the last couple of games, and there's no guarantee the Seahawks are saying that he's going to play on Sunday. Jadeveon Clowney as well didn't participate in practice on Wednesday, but Pete Carroll has said he will probably play. But they've got injury issues themselves, so not straightforward for them either. And particularly when you look at this team, which is, if not predicated on the run, then it is one of the teams in the NFL that weights more significance on it. Definitely in terms of number of carries and carries to pass ratio, it is going to change things up a little bit. Whether that is a significant differential or not remains to be seen. And I guess how well Homer and Marshall Lynch can carry the load. But if they're not getting anything going on the ground, then it's going to force their hand to do an apply an offense they don't typically like to do.
Yeah. I mean, you could say they've got great receivers. I mean, DK Metcalf. Yeah. And Lockett are good receivers.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, for me, I think it's going to be close. I think the Seahawks would go out if they're playing any other team. They're lucky to get the Eagles here. And if this was at the Seahawks, I think they'd win it. It'd be clear, wouldn't it? I mean, this is another question for me is it fair that the Eagles limping in at 9-7 are hosting, get a home advantage against the Seahawks? So I definitely think
the road
that
factor
has, that does, have to is be a factor at in this.
Having said that, right, so Seattle lose to San Francisco, so they drop down, and than get this road trip, as opposed to if they'd been the number three seed by winning the game. So I don't think they could have got home field advantage, but they could have got the number three spot. So they could have got home field in the wild card and facing the Vikings. Is it the Vikings at home or Eagles on the road? Based on what you said earlier on about the Vikings, it's probably an easier matchup, right?
Yeah, I think it's the best matchup. I think Seahawks will do it. I just think there's... The Eagles have got too many injuries, just too many injuries. I think it will be a lower quality, this will be the lowest quality game, possibly, of all the wild cards. I think it's too, they're just too banged up sides. Mm. And it's frustrating, really. No one wants to see a shadow of your team playing in the playoffs. It's a question whether do you have another week's break before the wild card? Mm. That's what I would possibly suggest as a chance to get more recovery in. So you've got sides that have, you know, just an extra chance. You've got squads playing the wild card that are more like the regular season squads.
We mentioned before about the Bills' fairly easy schedule. Another really interesting point in the Bill Barnwell ESPN piece about all the playoff, the wild card teams, all the playoff teams full stop actually, is the strength of schedule for the Seahawks, particularly against defense they've played, has been one of the hardest in the NFL. So the performance of Russell Wilson, as Barnwell's point, and the offense collectively against, let's see, what did he say? They played the third-ranked Steelers, fourth-ranked Ravens, second-ranked 49ers twice, the fifth-place Bucks, the seventh-place Vikings. I mean, they've had an incredibly difficult schedule in that respect. And Wilson's posted a passer rating of 102.6 in those games, 14 touchdowns, and three picks. So he is obviously an X factor, and I think it's going to have enough in this game to get it done. How far can the Seahawks go in the playoffs, do you think?
This is as far as they go.
Irrespective of what I've just said.
Yeah,
Up against defense, they get it done.
Wilson got sacked, according to my stats, in the second half of the season, he got sacked 29 times, which is one of the most quarterbacks got sacked. So I think that really sort of hurt. He was a MVP contender in the early part of the season, and he got shut down a bit more towards the end. I think he's brilliant. He's elusive. He's possibly one of the most elusive quarterbacks. Mm. I think the Eagles defensive line is quite good, so that could pose a problem to see how effective this running game is against that line.
Yeah.
And does Russell Wilson have the time to find Lockett and find Metcalf?
Yeah.
I think that's a really fascinating battle.
But to your point, because he can improvise, because he can keep things alive.
Yeah.
You know, some quarterbacks, Watson is another, Aaron Rodgers is another, that if they're under pressure, they can buy that extra little bit of time. And so I wonder if that negates, if the Wilson factor negates that the pressure he's going to be under. But with that injury to Brown as well, the line, that is going to be fascinating to unfold. But you think the Seahawks win this and then they're out next round?
Yeah, so who would they play if they won? What seed wild card are they? The fourth?
So no, Seattle are the fifth seed.
Fifth, so it would depend on who...
Depends on what happens.
Yeah, then, yeah.
Score prediction.
I think it's going to be a low scoring game. 17-10.
So that was in my head.
Seahawks.
That's strange. It was in my head you were going to go 17-10. You did. Seahawks.
Are you going to go for the same then?
I'm going to take the same bit.
Why don't I go for 18-10?
Okay, I'll take 18-10.
You don't see many 18s.
You don't see many. You're suggesting there'll be a safety, I guess, if it's 18-10.
Or 2 point. I think it'll be two touchdowns with two point conversions and a safety.
Why don't I go for a 2 point conversion in that situation?
Just to get 18.
Just to prove my scoreline prediction.
Right. In that book. Yeah. Have you seen that scorebook?
Which scorebook?
You know, they talk about the whether to go for a 2 point conversion.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And they say they consult the, someone's worked out.
Worked it all out. Yeah.
Who is the person that's worked? Is it a machine? Is it Mike Carlson's brother?
AccuScore.
Is it AccuScore? What is the book? I imagine it's a little book they get out and comes out of the blue.
Statistical probabilities of whether it's right to go for both fourth down conversions or 2 point conversions in a certain situation.
Yeah, so they must have all the times, all the scores.
Situations that are where you are.
What quarter it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Who does that? Can
I think it's happening too much. We will find out.
Don't just say that.
I'm interested.
But when are you going to find out?
I will find out. Cause next time you're on the show, I will have an answer for you for that question.
And what if I'm not back though? What if
we'll go, have
you just
back.
Say, listen,
we've known each other for 20 years.
He was asking too many questions about the book and we don't want that. We just want him to just say a bit about it and not talk too much and don't say anything rude. Just stop him from saying anything rude and stupid.
What I will do is check the statistical possibility or probability of you coming back on the show, which
it's going down.
It looks quick to going down. Weirdly, it's just a downward trajectory.
The same probability like the as someone going for 2-point conversion in the first quarter.
first score of the game. We'll go for two. I think it's happening. I think aggressive calls are happening too much, though. I think they're happening too much.
What do you mean by aggressive calls?
Going for it on fourth down when you should take the field goal, take the points, punt the ball back for possession. I think too many coaches are gung-ho and going for it too aggressive.
Well, that is my other... I think the aggressive play calling has been because of the... Is there a decline in kicking quality? It seems to be that there's some...
Extra point, yes, definitely, because of the rule change that pushed it back.
Has field goals gone down?
I haven't looked. I don't know. Again, interesting to work out.
Right, here's what I want.
I can write this down. Okay.
I want the book of the book. 2 points.
The actual book or just two?
I want to see if it is a book. Okay. How big is the book? Yep. Is it a hardback book? What's in it? I want to know the field goal percentage. Has that gone down?
Has it gone down?
And when I was watching the highlights of the 49ers last week.
Yes.
There was a brilliant stat I've not seen before. Mm. Someone kicked a field goal. I think it was 47 yards or something. Mm. And it came up on the screen. It came up the trajectory. Mm. And it came up the distance it would have been good from.
Oh, I see. Yes, right.
That's a new thing. I've not seen it before.
Really, really smart stuff. Yeah, that's only come in this season, I think. Yeah.
So it's only on some games. So is it some, I don't know what
Fox
channel.
Or CBS, okay. Yeah, one, yeah, it's one of them, isn't it? Yeah. So what was that kick? I didn't see that.
It was I was basically preparing before the game and reminding myself.
Well, of course.
I think it was the Seahawks 49ers highlights I was watching.
How long would the kick have been though? Do you remember what it would say?
It was 55. It would have been good for. Okay. I think it was a 47. You can look it up on the, YouTube
game
video.
Yeah.
YouTube
video, yeah.
But that should always be there.
I love it. Innovation.
What distance there?
So I've got a list of all those things I'm going to get ready for you next time you're on.
Not next time I'm on. Oh, okay. I think just you're going to say in the next podcast. Next Friday podcast.
Or we have a podcast on Monday. We can drop it then.
Is that too soon? It's still the Christmas holidays.
Give me a bit of time. I've got to prepare for the game on Sunday, but I'll see what I can do. I'll see what I would see if we can get the gang to work it out.
You can do a joke about it, but then everyone, I'm losing faith in you. Listeners are losing faith in you. People will think, he said he's going to find you. It's like a dad who says, I'm going to turn up and take you to my parents are divorced and my dad's going to come and take me to the swimming pool, but he's always an hour late and then he's 2 hours late. We never go swimming. We never go to the theme park. We always just get stuck in the back of his car while he goes out.
Are you drawing
on
personal memories here?
No, my parents are together. I was making that scenario.
You're such a great actor. I love it. You're so creative. Marek, it's always a pleasure.
Just get that book.
We will see you very soon, I hope, on the show.
See me as soon as there's a 2-point conversion first quarter.
Marek Larwood, where can listeners follow you on social media and find out your stuff?
At Marek Larwood. Mm-hmm. Got my own YouTube channel.
You do?
Making weird videos no one really likes.
Your new TV show, when's that out?
It's on January the 16th on ITV2.
Nice.
Celebability.
Yeah.
A show aimed probably at 18 to 24-year-olds.
Great, that's our target demo, so that's perfect.
I am the oldest person in it by 25 to 26 years.
Oldest, but the best. It's good to see you, man.
Take care.